Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Good afternoon. Welcome back from the weekend. Todd with you, WTIC. You know I like to have the guys on from prison. Primarily, Michael Leibowitz and his co-author and former cellmate of 11 years. You remember Brent McCall. He comes on as well. And the two of them, I love having on. Well, one, because they're smart guys, but two, because they provide us insight regarding what goes on in prisons. And I find this to be particularly valuable because, you know, our purpose here is to study the government, particularly state government, and to find ways to get us all to understand better just how corrupt and wasteful and purposeless it is, other than the pursuit of its own power. And nowhere, I think, is that more brazen and blatant, that behavior of using us, than in prisons, where they can do whatever they want, the compassion crowd, and where there is no compassion and where there is no mission inside the Department of Corrections that's in the best interests of the people who pay the bill and the people who it serves, which is us. It is an embarrassment how badly run prisons are and the prison system is, and without any credible goals other than doing what's best for the people who make their livings working in the Department of Corrections. Here to help us is a new discovery in terms of gaining insights into prisons. And I tell you all that because this is why you should be interested. Joining us now is Chandra Bezelko. She's a writer. She is a journalist. She is a blogger at prison-diaries.com. And she's here right now joining us on WTIC. Chandra, thank you for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
So I was happy to discover you because an op-ed of yours was printed last week in the Connecticut Mirror. And it was wonderful to see because, well, I love the headline. I don't know if you wrote the headline. Blame for coronavirus spread in prisons belongs to guards who don't wear masks. But I've been hearing this from Michael Leibowitz and Brent McCall over the last 10 months or so, 11 months. And it seemed bizarre how negligent the system was in terms of protecting prisoners and guards from the virus and staff. And I was curious what you discovered along these lines.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I did not write the headline, but I agree with it entirely. In my reporting, I have found that there are a number of people who are coming out and also people who are still in and who are talking to people outside who are complaining that a lot of the staff around them are not wearing masks. More than that, when they are asked, when an inmate asks a staff member, why aren't you wearing masks? Aren't you supposed to have a mask? Not in a, you know, confrontational way, but just wondering, isn't this the rule and isn't this safest for everyone? They're told to mind their business or sometimes threatened with discipline. So the number of people I would say who are telling me this is, I would say, overwhelming compared to reports I get on other things that are happening inside Connecticut prisons. So this is happening, I would say, throughout the prisons. I know it's definitely happening in York CI where I was, and it seems to be happening in the men's facilities as well. And I think the most important part of this is that the ACLU has been pretty responsive to people inside and tried to correct some things through litigation in 2020. And they have approached DOC through their counsel about this, the fact that so many staff members aren't wearing masks, and they were told there was nothing that they could do about it because there was some agreement where they couldn't review video surveillance, you know, the surveillance cameras inside the facilities to see who wasn't wearing masks and confirm that they in fact weren't wearing them. and then discipline them, or at least correct them and ask them, would you wear a mask?
You're saying that it was somehow part of the collective bargaining agreement that they couldn't use video to go back and to find cause to discipline an employee. Is that right?
Correct. That's what the council representatives of in the attorney general's office told the ACLU. But that's not true. The public, it's public record, these collective bargaining agreements. So I looked at them. Mm-hmm. There's no such provision in them. And then when I asked directly to both unions, SEIU and AFSCME Council 4, which represent various sectors of the correctional staff population, if this was true, I got a very canned statement, and they certainly didn't confirm that it was true that there was any agreement. So I'm concluding that there's not. I've asked for comment from the Attorney General's office and didn't get one.
See, I love this particular story. This isn't really the heart of what I wanted to get to, but it gets to the heart, which is this is how government behaves. This is how the prison system in particular behaves, because they view themselves as being protected by the same walls and bars that they use to protect us from the prisoners. And they think they can do whatever they want, say whatever they want, whether true or not, and get away with it. That's my impression. Now, you, I guess we should give some background. We're talking with Chandra Bazelko, who is a writer and has a blog, prison-diaries.com. You spent time, as you mentioned, in prison here in Connecticut. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was in York Correctional Institution from late 2007 until March 2014, so 6 years and 3 months approximately. As the listeners probably know, it's the state's only women's prison. The only other women's prison in the state in Connecticut is a federal prison in Danbury. And I spent that much time there for nonviolent crimes that still remain under post-conviction review. I actually won't get a trial on that, reviewing my convictions until 2024, because that's how much coronavirus has backed up the courts. And during that time, I was shocked to see what I saw. I saw people not caring, staff members not caring. I saw them breaking the rules. I saw expectations that you would have for safety and security just completely ignored. I want to be clear, that's not to say that there aren't some excellent employees in the Department of Correction. There are, but they're definitely not the majority.
Well, I think it's important that you made that point. People always make this point. Well, you're saying they're all bad. And I say, no, I'm not saying everybody's bad who works in government. What I'm saying is that if you put good people into a corrupt system, the corrupt system wins. And
yes,
that's what I think. If you're working in a place where the official stance of management is, oh, yes, we require all blanks to wear masks, whatever, or we suggest strongly to our employees that they wear masks, that's a way of saying we don't care what they do. We don't monitor. We pay no attention. And this kind of thing is the way, it seems to me, that government relates to the public. That is, use cheap con stories as a way of tricking people or just pushing them off your back because the effort to follow up and prove further the point that you want to make is really hard to do from the outside.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. I mean, DOC is a particularly egregious example of government problems, I would say. And I don't think that that's unique to Connecticut. I think it's probably true at the federal level. We don't have county or local jails here in Connecticut, but the states that do, I think it's there too. I think it's just a fertile breeding ground for everything that can go wrong with governance.
Chandra Bazelko is our guest. How did it happen in your life? You didn't grow up poor and downtrodden, as I understand it. Is that right?
Correct. I call myself an unlikely inmate. I went to an Ivy League school. I had two professional parents growing up. I grew up in an upper middle class neighborhood and went to private schools here in Connecticut. So I would say that I was highly irregular. I would say maybe more educated than, say, 98-99% of the women who are in New York Correctional Institution. The general statistics are that about 68% of them haven't graduated from high school. So I had also been in law school and graduate school for public health. So those degrees have eluded me so far, but I still had that information and that knowledge and that education, which made me quite different than the other woman that I was with. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying that in any way that made me better. It just gave me a completely different background that actually I think in many ways might have disadvantaged me, but also did give me certain advantages and in ways that a lot of the women I was with hadn't experienced before, like writing grievances or challenging rules or something like that.
So given your background, how did it happen that you ended up in prison?
My case involves identity theft and what they call drop spots, which is when someone uses someone's credit card to purchase something online or over the phone and has it delivered to a different address. This address where I am right now, my home in Orange, was used as a drop spot. I've made clear in my legal pleadings who I think has done this, but I took it to trial, lost, and things got very, very dangerous from there. So I am completely aware of the limitations of government, not just at the executive branch, which controls the Department of Correction, but also the judicial branch. It's the whole criminal justice system, or which I prefer to call sometimes the criminal legal system, because there's not always justice in it, is very flawed. I mean, that's the most generous way that I can describe it.
So your contention is you committed no crimes, that you were a victim of some kind of mistaken identity, whether deliberate or otherwise?
Yes.
Okay. Chandra Bezalko is our guest. She spent 7 years in prison. We'll talk more after a quick break. Stay with us on WTIC. Continuing with Chandra Bezalko, she is the proprietor of prison-diaries.com, where you can learn about what life inside prison in the state of Connecticut is like. And I wanted to have Chandra here because my mission is for you to understand how dysfunctional the prison system is. So, Chandra, now that we've established you, maybe you can spend a few minutes delivering some messaging on what you learned and what it is that you want people to know about how the prison system works.
Well, I think I would say that the prison system probably doesn't work, right? The recidivism rates in the state of Connecticut are a little bit better, but not much, than throughout the country, and they're not good. And then what I've learned being home almost 7 years is that a lot of those recidivism rates, when we hear that maybe 50% of people reoffend and either have to go back to custody or just have another conviction or something like that, it doesn't include the people who die. I have been stunned to learn how many women that I was incarcerated with who got out and died thereafter. I would say probably one a month. So I've been home for 7 years, so do the math on that. That's just people that I knew, not the people who I didn't know who were in the facility and left and died. So drug overdoses, domestic violence, there are a number of causes of it, but a number of people just never make it back. And I used to hear some of the guards say things like, you know, you would say so-and-so is back. It was someone who was frequently in and out of the prison. And some of them used to say, good for her. And I would think, you know, immediately you would either think that they were being sarcastic and maybe cruel or joking or something. And they weren't. They were deadly serious in that they were glad that she had come back and hadn't died. So I didn't really understand that until I got out, especially for a longer time, and saw how many women I knew personally who passed away. I mean, one was murdered. There was a murder in Waterbury a couple of years ago where the boyfriend killed her and stuffed her in a closet. I mean, there's all sorts of things. So a lot of people actually, not only are they not thriving, they're not alive when they leave prison.
But what you're saying is, you're saying is they are actually part of the sign of success in terms of the statistics.
Yes.
Yes. That are maintained by the Department of Corrections.
Correct.
Because they haven't recidivated.
Right.
Well, that's kind of scary.
If you say there's 50% recidivism rate, that would imply 50% success rate. I'm saying it's much lower than that because a number of people simply don't make it.
What else can you tell us? Maybe you have an anecdote or two that paint a vivid picture of just how dysfunctional a place it is and how... I mean, it's one of the problems that we have as citizens, I think, in assessing government is that we project our own goodness onto the people inside the system and the system itself. We assume that in the Department of Corrections, they actually care about helping people, that they actually care about making sure people can transition outside into the world once they're released. But what I see is that the door opens at the end of a sentence and you're basically thrown out with no resources, with none of the time and incredible amounts of money that are used to incarcerate you, none of the potential that might be realized in you having been invested in and developed so that you can succeed in the world. There's no interest in that as far as the Department of Corrections is concerned.
No. In fact, I think lately, while I was there, they instituted something new. So I was there but maybe 3 or 4 years before they started what they call offender accountability plans, or OAPs, they're called. And they're basically a list of classes and someone who's in prison has to take before they can start earning what they call good time credits or risk reduction credits. And they've reduced rehabilitation to a checklist, right? So if you take all of these classes and can check them all off and get what they call the certificate, it's just like, you know, one of those like fake diplomas that they would give you that you've completed the course. That's the sign of rehabilitation. There's no actual examination of whether you've achieved a level of introspection. Have you started thinking differently? There's no one-on-one with like some type of a counselor who would say like, what ended up getting you here? How can you do things differently? And I would say that that's actually really important for people who also profess innocence who go into prison, because obviously things weren't working out too great for you if you ended up in there anyways, right? So no one who was in there was really handling their lives all that well if they landed there. So there's no kind of testing of it, no examination. I guess you could say that there's a little bit at parole hearings. Parole is just basically letting an inmate live outside the facility. So you're technically still in legal custody of the Department of Corrections, mm-hmm. but not physical. So they ask a few questions, but I always felt that those answers could be very rote and memorized, and people could give the parole board what they wanted to hear and they could get out. So there's not any real like kind of adversarial testing to make sure that somebody's really ready to go out. I understand that some people might not be ready by the time that legally they have to be let out, that the Department of Correction can't hold them anymore. But for discretionary release, I don't think that it's more of just a paperwork process and checking boxes and seeing that they attended a certain course, not that they passed it. There's no testing, nothing like that.
Or not that the course itself is of any value, even if you did do well in it. Chandra, we have just a minute left. What else? Is there some action you want people to take, or what's your goal?
My goal is just basically to shed a light on what's happening in there, and you know, the good as well as the bad, but the bad outweighs the good pretty significantly. And go to prisondiaries.com, and you can see there's one particular story about a guard who jumped out of the dumpster. He used to climb into a trash dumpster and jump out and try to scare women to see if he could like kind of trigger a trauma response in them, like because they weren't expecting a human being to be in a trash dumpster. And when I reported this to leadership, they already knew about it and had no plans to do anything about it and fully admitted that in front of me. So I think it's called Dumpster Hire on the website. There's a search bar, but just if you just click around, you'll see a kind of a smattering of stories of what's happening in the modern prison. And it's not good. Like you'll see just more than anything, you'll see a lot of waste, I would think.
All right. Chandra Bezelko, prisondiaries.com. Thank you so much for your time. Great to talk with you.
Same here. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye. So there's more evidence. We'll talk about it coming up. Stay with us on WTIC. So, WTIC, Chandra Bezelko, I thought she's fascinating because here's a woman plucked out of, middle class or upper middle class, certainly sophisticated life. Professional parents, went to Princeton. And when she's 35 years old, she gets busted for this crime she says she didn't do. Spends 7 years in prison and now writes about it. What a fascinating life story, and what a unique messenger for the kind of anti-government, anti-prison outlook that I have, which is, I think, the true outlook, the honest outlook, and that is that these systems that are created inside of government, supposedly to make things better, may make things better in some marginal way, but the cost that we pay is enormous, and the lives they crush in order to employ the people they want to employ, to stay as big as they want to stay, to make sure they don't cut budgets, to make sure they don't declare that they're going to close buildings until years after they could have. All of that is what government is all about. It's not about helping people. It's not about rehabilitation of prisoners. It's not about giving taxpayers their money's worth. And the more I look into this, the clearer it becomes. The more people I encounter who are telling the truth about experiences with government, the more it becomes clear. That's why I wanted to have Chandra on. So if you have any feedback on that, or if you don't, either way is fine. I just wanted you to hear her because it's another messenger saying these people don't actually have efficacy as one of their outcomes or as one of their goals. There is not in government an expectation that things they do work, other than that by employing these people and creating these programs and putting up these buildings and raising these taxes year after year after year, no matter how badly things go, no matter how wasted the money is, they just don't care about an outcome other than the one they're looking for, which is to keep throwing a wider net every year and drawing in a broader swath of people. Now, I have something else I want to talk to you about, but you are welcome to comment on that if you wish. The exit of Donald Trump has brought back a more normal rhythm to politics in Washington, says NBC News in a story I'm reading to you. But outside the Beltway, deeper forces are reshaping the partisan landscape. Data from the NBC News poll shows that the composition of the two major parties is changing. And one massive shift is coming in employment, the kinds of jobs held by Democrats and Republicans. There are signs across racial and ethnic demographic groups that Republicans are becoming the party of blue-collar Americans, and the change is happening quickly. If the movement continues, it could have a large impact on the future of the GOP. Consider the scale of the changes overall. Since 2010, so over the last 10 years, blue-collar workers who vote Republican, that's gone up 12 points. White-collar workers who vote for Republicans has dropped 1 point. The number of Democrats lost to from white-collar workers. In other words, Democrats have dropped their blue-collar voters by 8 points, while Republicans have gone up 12 points. And in white-collar workers, that's a 1% drop for Republicans and a 1% increase for Democrats. So that's pretty substantial and pretty significant. I wonder if you have any insights into this. If you are somebody in one of these groups and you've made some kind of change, there are big changes going on with people engaging in realignment. That is, you look at your party and you say, that's not my party anymore. Let me out. I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. Have you ever thought that way about your political party? That's one way of looking at this thing, this dynamic that these numbers are revealing. In the last decade, the percentage of blue-collar voters who call themselves Republicans has grown by 12 points. At the same time, the number in that group identifying as Democrats has declined by 8 points. Among white-collar voters, the numbers have remained stable, with Democrats seeing a tiny increase and Republicans seeing that tiny drop, that one-point movement. But that blue-collar shift is noteworthy because of the policy implications it could have for the two parties. Blue-collar voters tend to want different things from the government than those with white-collar jobs on issues such as trade or Wall Street regulation. Some signs of what this change could mean became visible just after the election, when Republican voters aligned with former President Trump as he called for larger COVID relief payments from the government. A larger cash payout is not a policy choice one would normally associate with Republicans. In that way, the blue-collar shift for the GOP has the potential to reshape the Republican Party, especially considering how far-reaching it is, even beyond the white, non-Hispanic voters who make up the overwhelming majority of Republicans. So, white and blue-collar workers are trading places in terms of political party affiliation. I'm interested if this triggers any feeling of recognition inside of you, if you feel more emotionally connected maybe to your political party as a result of a dynamic shift where you feel the Republicans are more of a blue-collar working person's party. And, you know, work with your hands, work with your muscles, work with your back. That's blue-collar, right? And white-collar, more desk job workers. What are your thoughts on this? 860-522-9842. That's a regular call-in number, of course. Don't forget the rant line is there for you, 860-751-4698. This dynamic of what's going on with the parties right now is quite fascinating. Gladys calling from Bristol. Hello, Gladys.
Hi, Todd. Hey, listen, I just retired, but prior to my retiring, I was a machinist. And yes, most of us on hands people have gone Republican because Trump was for the American worker, and we are the American worker. We're the American workforce.
So what policy, is there a particular policy or a particular bit of rhetoric that you think made this happen? Does it go back 4 years ago to that campaign where he said we're going to bring the jobs back and we're not going to, you know, we're not going to support our companies moving overseas the way he would beat up on companies to try to get them to bring manufacturing back?
I've been told from everybody that is in manufacturing, ever since Biden got in, they've slowed down. So that's telling me that things are slowly going back to China. So how is that helping the American worker?
Okay, I hear you. So, and how widespread do you think this is? How did you notice? How do you measure this in your own mind?
How do I know this? I mean, one day they're really busy, and then boom. It's dead. I mean,
you mean it just? Biden.
The gear, the wheel, it has slowly turned down. It's like the locomotive, you know, is trying to go uphill, and it's depressing.
And what and, over what period of time are you talking about this change that you're seeing?
I retired in December, and it's now February. And back in December, we were working really hard to get everything out. And bang, it's slow.
All right, so you're talking right now, just since the election, that you
Correct.
Think there's a tangible difference
the
amount of
so.
Energy. That's very interesting. All right, Gladys, thank you for that. It's great to hear from you. 860-522-9842. Tom in Watertown. Hi, you're on WTIC.
Hi, Todd. Good afternoon. I got to tell you, I really believe it's twofold. It's the way Trump talked to the working class people. And the second thing is it's the impact of our day-to-day bills that people are starting to realize that the policies that the Democrats support are hurting the working class people because that's what's raising our cost of living, our gasoline bills, our oil bills, our food bills, our clothing, our insurance. Everything they do carries down to us, and people are starting to wake up to the fact that when you tax businesses, we're the ones who are paying for it. And you take that along with the way that Trump talked to the working man and the blue class working people, they're waking up. They're seeing the impact of the bills that they pay that they pass.
But it sounds like part of what you're saying, Tom, is that this is also the messaging of the Democrats in the state, that when you have a political party that all it does is raise taxes every time it goes yeah. through an election cycle or a budget cycle, it's always about higher taxes. That's the only solution they offer.
Correct. And I think people are finally saying, hey, enough is enough. We can't handle this.
How about the immigration issue? Because if you look at what's going on with immigration, Joe Biden is basically celebrating and pushing for a return of things that are clearly bad for the country.
And
why would you want to send signals after the amount of refugees and illegal immigrants surging to our border has been dramatically slowed down by the Trump actions? Why would you then want to increase those numbers?
Well, we know why they want to increase it, but that's where the working class is waking up to it. That's where Trump talked to the American people about stopping that, because it's affecting our ability to create or have jobs for the American people here. And I think that's where it's carrying to the working class. Take it to the other side, the white collar people, they can afford those changes. They can afford those extra bills, so it doesn't impact their day to day lives the way it does the working man. And I think it's twofold. I think it's people waking up to the impact of those policies, and Trump helping to wake up those people to hear it and think about the impact of those policies. He spoke to people differently than any politician. As you've said many, many times, the politicians tell us what they want. They know we want to hear. Trump told us what they didn't want us to hear.
That's very good. All right, Tom, anything else?
That's it.
Thank you, sir. Good to talk with you. 860-522-9842. It's a really interesting dynamic, because everybody's wondering where things go. And one of the things I hear a lot, which, as you know, bothers me, it's when people call up and say, well, Republicans will never win another election. And they say that because of the demographic changes, because they think that the advantages that Democrats have with minority voters and with certain classes of voters, that those are insurmountable. But what this poll shows is that very quickly there's a shift going on, and that includes Hispanic voters who are blue-collar workers, black voters who are blue-collar workers, are moving towards Republicans just like white blue-collar workers. What do you think about that? 860-522-9842. We'll pause briefly and continue on WTIC.
1080.
Big shifts going on in blue-collar workers away from Democrats and towards Republicans. This is a realignment that is very intriguing, because there is much to consider in terms of where the future lies. And people tend to think that things are very locked in place, and this is evidence that they really aren't, that people are ready to make moves when they see their needs or their philosophies reflected by a political party other than the one they have been traditionally voting in. What are your thoughts on this? 860-522-9842. Glenn calling from Torrington. Hi, Glenn.
Good afternoon, young man. What?
Well, thank you for that.
You're more than welcome. What really kills me is the hatred that the people had for Donald Trump. They thought with their...
Well, which people are you talking about, Glenn?
Well, I have family, for instance, okay? I have a sister she hated Donald Trump. So you could have put a potato in the office, which we did. And she voted, she just hated Donald Trump. And she doesn't understand. They said, well, taxes are going to go up. No, they're not. Well, they're very well-to-do people. Now your car that you drive, and you say, oh, why, that's a business car. Well, you're going to get called out that no, it isn't. So now you're going to pay. People just don't realize the taxes that are coming down the pipeline. Look at schooling. I witnessed homeschooling today. What a joke. What a joke. The two little kids came out of their room and they were arguing, and they're supposed to be in the classroom. Now, when was the last time you had an argument with your brother in school? I'm 60 years old. If I ever did that, one of us would get slapped in the head, and you didn't tell your mother that you got slapped in the head, because you'd get slapped in the head again. It's just... No, honestly, this...
Yeah, no, I hear you.
this is.
But what's your point? What does this say to you?
It just, I cannot believe that the people, their hatred for Donald Trump, watch out what you wish for, is my point, Todd.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's what it's coming down to.
I hear you.
You have a great afternoon.
You too, Glenn. Thank you for the call. The thing is that people get these narratives in their heads, these stories, and those stories overwhelm everything else. Have you noticed, for example, there was this big media machinery that every day was spinning with this crazy, frantic pace with a message of Trump is bad, Trump is bad, Trump is bad. And have you noticed how quiet the airwaves are? They don't know what to talk about. They have nothing exciting. Trump and Trump hate were a huge business. They built him up into this big pariah, and they made a lot of money off of him. And everybody bought into it because they absorbed this superficial bombardment through the media of negativity day in and day out. So it's tough when people have been brainwashed like that. It's tough to break through with something more important, something obviously more important, like taxes are going to go up. Steve calling from Winchester. Hi, Steve.
Todd, I'm just wondering, what difference does it make how many Republicans? We could have twice as many Republicans and vote twice as many votes as the Democrats for whoever we want to put in office. It isn't going to make any difference if the elections are rigged. How many people do you think are in Iran who love their government? I would say the majority of the people over there feel oppressed. And I would say, you know, people in this country are starting to feel oppressed. The reality is we're being oppressed. And when you got NPR nonstop on every station, just a flow of idiocy and lying, and people are slopping it up like pigs at a trough, it's never going to stop. Something outside of our reality today is going to have to intercede.
You think that our electoral system doesn't work in any way as a representative system? You think the whole thing, somebody just sits there behind a curtain and makes, spins the dials to where they want the numbers to be?
Little outlying areas, it probably functions to some degree, but for the places that it matters, where the big fish are going to be voted into office, I mean, everybody knows that Governor Cuomo is an idiot. Everybody in the country knows he's an idiot. But President Biden says he's the greatest thing since the mousetrap was invented.
Yes, but to me, the election rigging doesn't happen with a guy behind a curtain spinning the dials.
Oh, I don't think so either. It happens with NPR blasting people day out and day in, and everybody listens to it and thinks it's the gospel. And the people that don't believe it's the gospel don't have any recourse anymore.
Well, there is more than one message that gets communicated. So it's true that liberals control the majority of the media. That doesn't mean they get all the media. And it doesn't mean that people don't have their own beliefs. And it doesn't mean that people who are feeling their pocketbook. And that's what this story is about, that blue-collar workers see themselves not being represented.
But, Todd, it's in our pocketbook today. I just heard a story today about this whiteness stuff that's going on, and they're doing the Coca-Cola just had to go back in the closet because it was too soon to come out of the closet, where they were going to start making people sign papers about how guilty we are for being white and everything else.
Yes.
And nobody's speaking up about it. We're all afraid, Todd.
Well, I don't think we're all afraid. I think some people are afraid, and I think there's a potential for some backlash on this as well. Thank you, Steve, for the call. It's great to hear from you. 860-522-9842. Call the rant line, 860-751-4698.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.